You think of this as a sequel to your Orr book.
I do. What I tried to write about in the Orr book was that the kind of Orr myth, you know, the Canadian hockey player mythology. How we've wrapped ourselves around that idea of this, the product of hockey players and kind of hockey genius as a product of the place, and small towns and backyard rinks and skating on a frozen pond and just kind of emerging out of the country. And Orr was that. That was Orr's story, and that was really Orr's story. And then Gretzky's kind of, but Gretzky is that, but he comes along in a completely different world where there's more self-consciousness, where we're kind of looking for it. We're kind of waiting for the next incarnation and ways to package that incarnation and, you know, monetize the incarnation and, you know, make it fit, make him fit the story as much as kind of just appreciating the story as it evolved. And he comes along at a different time media-wise, at a different time hockey-wise. Their careers almost abut each other, which is why I start the book there. You know, Orr's retirement announcement comes almost bang on Gretzky signing with the Oilers in the WHA, or being traded to the Oilers in the WHA. It's the same story, but it changes. It changes with the times. The times force it into a different place. And Gretzky is, you know, Bobby Orr was no one knew who Bobby Orr was until he was 14 years old. He might as well have been playing on Mars. And Wayne Gretzky was on Morningside when he was 10 years old. He had already been commodified. We were already making him fit and already anointed him, you know, before we even knew what we had there. So it's the echo of that kind of creation myth, that story that I really liked. That was where it started. And you know, what happens to that story the second time through in a different kind of Canada? You know, not 1950s, 1960s Canada, but 1970s, 1980s Canada, which is a different place.
Were the tears fake or were they real?
They were real. I don't know anybody that thinks that was there and that was involved that thinks they were fake. But I think the question was why he was crying. And I think that's a more complicated answer. He wasn't crying because he had been traded to the LA Kings per se. He wasn't crying because he was going to have to leave Canada. He wasn't crying because he was going to have to leave Edmonton. I think he understood the inevitability of that long before. He knew that he wasn't going to finish his career as an Oiler. He knew eventually that he wouldn't be able to get paid what he was worth in Edmonton. He knew the realities of the team. He knew the realities of Pocklington's business. You know, Wayne was pretty astute that way. So I don't think he had any fantasies. And he did understand the business of hockey. You know, this is the business he'd been in since he was 12 years old or 11 years old. He got it.
But managed always to look like he didn't.
Well, which is a great quality, especially in Canada.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Don't really care about
we
the
like
money.
We like guys who, yeah, it's just a game. Well, mm-hmm. Yeah, it wasn't just a game. So he wasn't crying about that. It wasn't like this was this kind of forced, you know, he wasn't being sent into exile. He got it. And he was pretty content with the whole idea. And I would think he was pretty happy with the idea. You know, his wife was happy about it. He understood the possibilities, financial and otherwise. I think he liked the idea of being selling the game down there. He liked McNall. He liked the whole scene down there. So this is him going back to a place where he was pretty darn comfortable, pretty much at home. This was not an alien land, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And so he wasn't crying about that. I think he was crying because, you know, it comes up talking about the team. And I think it was like, it's funny, Jeff Goodman, who was the PR guy working for Pocklington, said when you write your speech, it should be like, treat this like it's high school graduation. That this is the moment when we all say goodbye to each other, but it's a natural evolution, and we can't stand in the way of growing up, right? This is where, best of luck, wasn't it great? Weren't we all pals? And I think it's the moment when it's the end of the team. It's the end of that part of his life. It's the end of that group. It's over. Playing in that team, this is, you know, a hockey guy. I think that must have been an ecstatic experience to play for those Oilers, as for Wayne Gretzky. It'd be the perfect hockey experience. And that's done. And I think what he's thinking about is that, about the guys, the dressing room, the games, the Stanley Cups, that's over. But it's not about the other thing. It's not what people think. You know, this idea that evil Peter Pocklington has sold my flesh to Bruce McNall and I'll be damned if I'm going to go willingly, but I can't because it's out of my control, and therefore I'm going to weep. He had some control of the process. He knew what he was getting into, and those tears dried up really fast. You know, if you watch the press conference now, you go back to it, once you get to the question and answers, which no one ever shows anymore in the clips, there's 25 minutes, I think, of questions and answers with the press after that statement. He's clear-eyed. He's calm. He's rational. He looks like he wants to get on the plane and get the hell out of town. And when he got to L.A., of course, it was a party. So, you know, he wasn't weeping for Canada, and he wasn't weeping for the things that maybe the framework we've imposed on that scene, you know, the kind of cultural framework that we put on that scene for our own needs. That wasn't, his tears were different than Canada's tears.
The book is Gretzky's Tears, Hockey, Canada, and the Day Everything Changed. I've been speaking with the author, Stephen Brunt, and Gretzky's Tears, published by Knopf Canada.